Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Patrick Lenihan. Thank you for getting up early and finding your way over here to this session. Let me start by letting you know that nobody's paid me to say anything here this morning, so I have no disclosures. UIC, the University of Illinois at Chicago, has pioneered the development and application of systematic reflection for doctoral level leadership training and practice research. Over the next 20 minutes, I would like to provide an overview of what that is, focusing on the what, the why we're featuring it in our DRPH program, and then how we use it. Now, admittedly, I can't cover a topic like this comprehensively in the time that I have, but what I'd like to do is at least pique your interest about systematic reflection, and then maybe if you have questions, we can address them in the question and answer period. And some of our faculty are here, so if I sound confusing, I'm sure somebody's going to bail me out in the audience. Let's start with the why. There's been a lot of hand-wringing over the past 25 years about the disconnect between academic public health and public health practice. One of the strategies that is emerging to fill that gap is to refocus the Doctor of Public Health as the highest practice degree in the field. And a consensus is starting to emerge that the DRPH should be about leadership, about practice, and about contributing to the evidence base of practice. But the question is, well, how do you do that? Retool a degree. Looking more broadly at the origins of public health and the conditions that we face today, if we go back to Winslow's classic definition of public health, we see that public health is defined as both the science and art of practice. But we focus mostly on the science, seldom on the art, and most importantly, in combining the art and the science, where I think the most effective interventions can be found. If you will, to combine both the academic concerns and the practice concerns. If we fast forward to today, you see that public health is facing a variety of practice challenges of great complexity, of wicked problems, if you will, that defy the resolution, even through sophisticated technical rationality of scientific methods. To address these adaptive challenges requires a different approach to leadership, adaptive leadership, which goes beyond position or authority or scientific and management expertise to generate that organizational learning that is necessary today to create the knowledge to solve some of these wicked problems. So, a common denominator which connects all of these conditions for leadership, for learning from practice and organizational learning, and for practice research is systematic reflection. So what is that? Well, reflection is an elusive concept which has been defined by many authors going back to Plato and Aristotle, who emphasized the use of logic and reason to uncover truth. Now, John Dewey is perhaps the more modern-day root source, at least the most commonly cited source. But there are a lot of other definitions, and you can see here there's a great deal of variety. But if you look across these definitions, you see some common elements which emphasize sense-making, a structured way of thinking, exploring beliefs and assumptions, and turning tacit knowledge into explicit knowledge for problem solving through learning. Reflection, though, is often confused with other thinking activities, largely because some of these activities take place in or result from reflection. But reflection is really different. It's more than meditation or a stream of consciousness or being quick in thinking and doing technical analysis. There's something more to it than that that we need to capture. So you might ask then, if reflection is so broadly recognized, going back to ancient Greek philosophers, why is it not more commonly used? Well, there are a number of barriers to the application of reflection, including most prominently the lack of concrete guidance and how reflection can be used, pressures, particularly at the management level, for action over reflection. We live in a very action-oriented society, and the higher you move up in your organization, if you look like you're thinking too much and not acting enough, you're not very decisive. At least you're not viewed as being very decisive. But perhaps the most important criticism of reflection, at least from a public health standpoint, is that while it's useful for problem solving, reflection is not scientific and therefore produces a subordinate form of knowledge. But I think this view can be challenged. Reflection has many of the features associated with scientific inquiry. It has the theoretical underpinnings in psychology, decision science, sociology, anthropology, brain science, going back even to philosophy. And if you think about it, and it has been pointed out by people more prominent in the field than me, science underneath is just a formalized way of thinking, as Kuhn has pointed out in his landmark book. And systematic reflection is certainly closer to some of the qualitative approaches than it is, say, to the approaches of normal science, but it very much fits within the scientific tradition. If we look closely at these theories, we can see some of the underlying principles that provide some guidance on how reflection can be used. Things like learning from experience, especially failures, searching for evidence, that is, treating your experience as a source of data, challenging assumptions, overcoming bias, and making the implicit explicit, and following a structured or systematic process in doing that. One key principle is what constitutes knowledge, which provides some insight into how science and art are brought together through systematic reflection. While public health does privilege information gathered through science and technical rationality, facts and technical information alone do not become knowledge without some in explicit filtering to make meaning. Meaning has to be extracted in order for any kind of data, regardless of how sophisticated it's produced, to have it make sense. Systematic reflection makes explicit the hidden knowledge that gets generated in experience and our mental models, our assumptions. So one function then of leadership is to bring all three sides of this knowledge triangle together. It's not just the base that public health likes to look at, but it is the emotional, the felt truth, which happens more out there in the real world, and then the experience-based truth, which people gain as they move into practice, and they make good decisions all along, but they often don't slow down and think about how they're making those decisions. The best way to build a knowledge base within an organization is combine these things, the science, the experience, and our beliefs. I think you can get a sense of how this works in looking at Senge's ladder of inference, which provides an example of how we think and then how systematic reflection changes thinking. Now, we normally climb this ladder by continually moving back and forth between two steps, our assumptions and our experiences. What systematic reflection does is cause us to use more steps on the ladder by backing down and questioning our assumptions, looking more broadly at our experience for possible data before drawing conclusions and taking action. So looking at this as a larger ladder, you're able to metaphorically reach higher places rather than keeping jumping back and forth on those two steps. In applying these principles, we can reduce systematic reflection to some important key elements that focus on experience, that a search for evidence, which makes it a form of inquiry, that explicitness and transparency in thinking, questioning assumptions, the connection of elements to make meaning, the cyclical process that occurs as we reconsider things again and again, and that systematic approach to how we follow a series of steps, much like we do in following research design and being able to generate knowledge and then know that knowledge has some validity. One of the key elements in the use of reflection is reflective questions, which serves the function of slowing down thinking and deciding and creating explicitness by forcing a search for answers rather than just reaching to answers in the first place. This is also an important leadership consideration as most authorities recognize the use of questioning as a distinction between management and leadership. Managers are expected to have answers. Well, you get into a leadership position, those answers often aren't enough, so you need to be able to ask better questions. Reflective questions also illustrate the iterative nature of systematic reflection and that reflection occurs at several levels, from the basic facts level to the assumptions or mental models level, and finally at a critical reflection level, which arrives at new meaning to derive alternative understanding and the possibility of different solutions. So we have combined these elements into a seven-step systematic reflection process, which starts with a spontaneous consideration of experience, describes the facts of that experience, tests the assumptions underlying that set of facts, derives alternative mental models, searches then for other evidence to validate these models, draws conclusions, and then becomes a basis for action. Following those steps makes the reflective process systematic and then moves it away from some of those other things on the list which I mentioned that reflection is not. The application of systematic reflection in both individual and organizational learning can be demonstrated, again, by borrowing from Peter Senge, which also demonstrates the iterative nature of moving from reflection to action and from the more conceptual to the more complete or more concrete. At the group level, systematic reflection becomes a form of action learning and how a group can consider a shared experience and then engage in group problem solving. A group reflection is really a natural extension of individual reflection, and indeed it is the individual reflection which sets up the effectiveness of group reflection, which gives you added benefits. And these include a broader search for evidence, an enhanced ability to explore and test assumptions, a more efficient application of the process gained from both having multiple perspectives. Yes, two minds or three minds or four minds are better than one. And certainly having more hands to do the work is always better than having to do it yourself. So you get some division of labor here and efficiency with group reflection. A particularly attractive feature of systematic reflection is that it draws on tools which are both deceptively simple and commonly used in leadership development and group facilitation. Now, I've listed some of the more popular ones here. I won't read them to you, but on the left side, I think some of these are more appropriate for individual reflection, and then on the right side are for group reflection. As the quote from Fuller suggests, a related desirable feature of using these tools in reflection is that you can learn reflection by using the tools. So it gives you this added benefit of being able to reinforce this experience-based learning approach, which we emphasize in our program. So let's look to reflection in the DRPH program. I'll kind of fast forward here as I don't want to run out of time. Looking at how systematic reflection has been integrated into our Doctor of Public Health and Leadership program, teaching reflection as in teaching leadership can't be done and taking a didactic approach. Reflection is learned through experience. One goal of the UIC DRPH program is to create that experience through creating a reflective practicum or providing reflection space where students can learn systematic reflection by doing it in a supportive and non-risky environment. Systematic reflection comes in primarily in three component parts, which you can see on the slide. In the curriculum, where students learn the basics of systematic reflection as connected to the various courses that they take. in the portfolio, where they demonstrate the use of reflection for their leadership development, and then finally in the dissertation for their capacity to contribute to the evidence base of public health practice. Let's look more closely at reflection in the portfolio and the dissertation. Systematic reflection is used in each of the three phases of our portfolio, corresponding to the multiple levels of reflection that I covered in an earlier slide. First, students use their practice history, often their CVs, to reflect on their current leadership competencies, drawing on the evidence that comes out of the resumes and CVs. On the next level, students consider adaptive leadership as an alternative mental model, and then assess the evidence of how well they meet the program competencies, and then in concluding, identify gaps in their leadership development. In the third phase, students demonstrate their personal mastery of the competencies they will need to be adaptive leaders, recognizing that each student is going to approach this from a different perspective, given that they're going to be occupying different roles in the larger public health system. The portfolio is developed over several years as students gain competency in reflection and a working understanding of adaptive leadership and how they can best contribute to the evidence base of practice. Turning to the dissertation, a dissertation for a DRPH student often starts out as a vague interest expressed as a problematic situation, or perhaps at the other end, more like a PhD dissertation, as an overly narrow technical problem that they're going to apply a standard research design and collect data to solve. Systematic reflection is useful in both instances to both identify the underlying adaptive challenges and then to extract a researchable problem through a naming and framing process on the left side of this slide, and then deciding what aspects to focus on through the dissertation research. Now, ultimately, there is a need to have a technical approach to study the adaptive challenge, because research design always has a methodology which has some technical expectations. But the key to demonstrating leadership thinking is maintaining that underlying complexity in the problem and the connection to the adaptive challenge, which makes the issue worthy of study in the first place. So, in concluding here, this kind of brings us back to where I started in connecting academia to practice and the role of the DRPH program at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And I'm reminded of this quote from Donald Shern in one of his books, that we need to balance research rigor with relevance in training DRPH students, and recognize the role of leadership in making that change and in dealing with the complexity that we find in practice today. Thank you.